Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier. So we're here with the Ratman, one of Argentina's world championship players, and on the upswing of the Blooded returning back to the meta, right?
Hello. Thank you for having me, guys. I'm pretty happy to be here. I'm honored, actually. Blooded are, I feel like they're always been on a very special place in the meta, you know? Always worked. They're on that sort of spot that if it ain't broken, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they haven't been under the gaze of the game developers maybe that much, because they're just like, maybe, I don't know, AdMech, for example, that's another Kill Team I like and know pretty well, that it just works. I don't think it needs much stuff.
So a lot of raw stats. Blooded get to play a few more tricks compared to Hunter Clade, though.
Yeah, a lot of dirty tricks.
And I think from talking to some people who have played Blooded, some of their hardest matchups, like Commandos, now that Commandos have been knocked down a peg, Blooded have been able to like play a little bit better. Part of why we hit you up was actually we were looking at the weekly stats on our Monday stat show on Patreon, and I was like, oh, Blooded did pretty well. I looked over, I'm like, oh, Ratman, I remember Ratman.
Representing. I always tell people I'm a one trick pony. I can play one faction good, and that's my faction. I really feel comfortable with it. So
it's my world championship also.
Well, thank you. I did win a couple of games. I lost more than I won, but I had a lot of fun. And all the games I lost them for like a super close difference. So it was super, super good experience, and I really hope to be there again this year. That would be wonderful.
And between like the world championships and now, a lot of the upper end of the meta has kind of been like lightly tapped away to make Blooded probably function a little bit better, just because Commandos, I think, being one of the hardest matchups, definitely hurt. And then Felgor, probably it sucks that they're back at one APL compared to the zero.
Felgor, I'm pretty scared of them too, because they're a tough bone to raw, you know. They can do some stuff, but I think it's manageable. But the green type was insane. There was no stopping that. It was like choppers. Just give him all choppers and give him hell. It just worked. And I'm glad it worked for so long, and people got comfortable with it, and I'm glad it stopped now.
Yeah, we could now take a break.
And it's like, let's find a new way to make this faction great again, you know?
Yeah, so how long have you been playing Blooded?
I've been playing Blooded ever since, well, they came out on Morrok, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after I built it and I painted it, I'll say about 4 to 6 months after the release, according to my working time. And my hype, I was very hyped with him, so I went commando on it. And ever since then, and it was just like one of those things, like the love at first sight, you know. I always tell people, I hope you all like your Kill Team as much as I do mine, because I really feel that I really enjoy pulling the dirty tricks, knowing the time, knowing how and when to save your command points. Because I don't have strat ploys. I have one strat ploy, and it's called command reroll, and that's it. And knowing when and where to place those, knowing how to manage your losses. It feels a lot like playing Skaven, and that's something I really like. I don't play.
Idea too.
I would love to. I don't have balls.
There's actually a guy in my local scene that plays Blooded, and it's 100% Skaven conversions. It would actually
make perfect conversions, I think, especially with the new range on the. The new range is coming up.
I'm waiting for those new clan rats in order to slay some of those and get my Blooded 2.0. But yeah, I would. That would be my dream. I just don't have the balls to execute
it. It's super cool. Maybe I'll try to rally up some pictures from Micah is his name. And he's got Blooded tokens that are like little pieces of cheese. And then he's got a big green one for the gaze of the gods.
Fucking
pretty epic. And I'm sure, you know, Ratman's a good appreciator of the Skaven.
Yeah, and that's my thing.
How have like the rest of the players in Argentina reacted to you on Blooded? Like, obviously, you went to the World Championships among, I think, you and one other player, two other players?
Yeah, there was one other player.
So there were a handful, there were two of you at the World Championships this year. Hopefully you guys get maybe one or two more. I don't know how many more golden tickets your scene is getting, but how has everyone else played around your Blooded? What kind of tricks have worked well for you outside of tack reroll?
Well, I use a lot. Well, there's this big old trick, we all know it, but there's something that is just so much fun to do, but it's kind of a gacha, which is just gaze your grenadier and drop a diabolic in there and it goes boom. That's just beautiful. Make sure to put a beast belt on it so he doesn't get affected by the splash. But he'll die anyway, so you can just ignore that. I really enjoy a lot playing with my forces that are able to do stuff in conceal. I put a lot of value on my flancer as a very tactical piece, you know, being able to maybe do a small dash on your scouting. So in order to be able to reach a charge in turn one, that seems time, and they won't get a shot because you're in conceal. So, and he can put some mean damage. He can punch up his Whately.
Because the Flinzer is the one that can charge from conceal as long as he, and then if he stays within light or heavy terrain, he gets lethal 5, and he's got ceaseless normally.
Yeah, but here's the trick. This is the neat part. He's a 7-wound model, so we all know that he won't survive a fight versus a beefy thing, you know? But whenever he dies, he gets to allocate an extra die that he hasn't allocated during combat. And people don't see that coming. And that could hurt a Marine. That could hurt a beefy.
Yeah, so you can take your one small guy that your opponent wasn't thinking about, and you hopefully get either 6 to 10 damage through is the goal, I guess.
They'll be like, I'll party this. And it's like, but lethal 5. So there's 2 crits. And and one more crit before I go. And now you're hurt. two less inches for your movement.
Yeah, it's interesting because I just interviewed a tournament in Paris. And the second place player got Blooded. He also called out, I think, a recon dash on a Flenser or some other operative to get an early charge off. So I guess there's some commonality in people playing for these mid-board objective pieces and getting a Flenser into a good position. Just because people are worried about the plasma gun with the shield combo, which is like the standard range combo for Blooded, and they forget that a Flenser can go and doink a mid-board objective if you let them.
Yeah, he can deal some damage, and he's a very hideable piece, you know. He's in conceal behind heavy terrain. You won't hit it. He's bulletproof.
Yeah, the Flenser is really good. He was kind of one of my favorites, like, looking through it. When it comes to the 4 troopers, or, like, the troopers, the Ogryn, and the Enforcer, what are your thoughts there?
I'm a very straightforward guy. I'm a simple guy. You know, Charlie, Rock, Flag, and Eagle. It's Ogryn all the way. I call him the small guy. The small boy, he puts a lot of pressure on the table. I call him like a zone neglector. It's like, okay, this 9 inches are his whole charge range. I know if you get anywhere inside that bubble, you'll get fucked. And you know it. So you won't be coming unless you're very sure you can actually take it. It's something very similar that what happens with the anointed from the legionaries. When he turns, it'll be like, oh, fuck no, I won't get near that thing.
Or like the Wormblade Locust, you get to produce a bubble where your opponent really doesn't want to interact with you. So unless they have, you know, or they know it's coming and they send in like a big plasma gun on a suicide run, effectively. Because once they hit the Ogryn, they're probably dead in response most of the time, right?
I mean, you get shot with a Melta, you're probably gone.
Yeah.
That's life. But I mean, he's great. I really focus. He's the one piece by which bringing my corpse man is essential,
mm-hmm.
because I give him feel no pain, and on the first turn, I will, whenever I need to burn out an activation or whatever, I'll activate Doctor. I complete his vaccine plan. I'll be like, okay.
I'll give him two shots, right?
Now the boy has his whole flu shots done. He's got a ceaseless. It's just a lot. It's four dice, three ups, five, six rending, stun. It's a whole bag of nasty shit.
Mm-hmm.
So
basically you're giving him the entire spread of rules, so he can do the most damage possible. So he's got relentless, and he's got a six up feel no pain, which takes his 16, I think it's 16 wounds, 16 wounds, and plays closer to like 18, 19 wounds. And every once in a while, we'll play like 20, it'll feel extremely unfair.
Yeah, that's on me, it would be like 17 wounds. Yeah. I'm not good with those feel no pain.
Time to buy new dice.
If I get any.
What about the Enforcer? I know a lot of. I think. From what I've heard, most people say you pretty much always have the idea of bringing the Ogryn in most matchups, just because it's so much more powerful in terms of reliable damage compared to everyone else on the team. And if you're bringing the Ogryn, you always bring the Corpseman to make sure that he has at least Relentless, if not the 6-up Feel No Pain, is what I've generally heard.
Well,
but what about the Enforcer or the two dorks? Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'll take the two dorks over the Enforcer 99% of the time. Because I'm a simple guy. I already told you. The math is very simple. It's 4 APL versus 2 APL. Versus two. It's 14 wounds versus 8 wounds. He saves some 4 ups, but he's still 8 wounds. I mean,
yeah, and it's if the Enforcer or one of the goons gets shot, they're going to die anyways. Plus, like, that group activation shenanigans is pretty good. Like, do you ever, like, give them grenades or, like, equipment or anything?
I usually take the Grenadier because I really enjoy using my Diabolic. But if I'm playing it versus maybe an elite team in which I wouldn't need it really, or I would have the... I could just buy the goons a crack frags or whatever and just go for it. But I have a hard time using the officer. I've known a lot of people say that it's very good to give him an extra APL so then you can charge, you kill something because the Hellboy Fist, that's bad news.
That's true. That's the big Chaos Fist does look pretty cool.
7 damage.
Yeah, and with the Gaze of the Gods, he'll just run in and get like an auto crit, which is good synergy. Mm.
Yeah, plus if he's gazed, you spend 1 command point, he'll get 1 extra APL. So you charge, you fight, you shoot. And if you're retaining a crit, you're definitely killing something and a half, probably.
Or you could like charge fight and then have somebody else do a charge or a dash or whatever the enforce action, just because you're in a better position. So you can kind of like surprise move around a couple pieces when your opponent isn't expecting it. Maybe in a matchup like Veteran Guard or any of the other squishier human size operatives where the Power Fist can one-shot something, you can just go up, one-shot something, pass an action over to someone else and have them also charge, which could be pretty good.
Could be used defensively also. You could get someone to dash to safety, you know? Mm-hmm. But the Overwatch shot is tricky because it interacts properly with the blooded tokens. I mean, if you have a blooded token, you're hitting on 5-ups, but you have one granted. That usually ends up in one hit. I covered it.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're using the Plasma or the Melta, where the one hit at least has AP2. I think I watched Chris on the West Coast, Chris Bakke, he was just on the podcast last week. He used the Enforcer with the Plasma gun and the shield in a couple games against, I think, around the Eldar teams, where two dice is enough to like heavily maim an 8-wound operative. So effectively, if you give your Plasma Gunner the first blooded token on turn one, you take a shot, get an Overwatch, and you can get a couple extra shots that your opponent isn't expecting. So that's a spot where the Enforcer might be useful. But the Ogryn would probably also be useful in those matchups. It's just kind of you look at the map, and depending on how the map looks, if you feel like you're going to have more shooting lanes, maybe the Enforcer, you can get some value on turn one or turn two.
Yeah, I feel like you never don't want the Ogryn. Man, sometimes the commissioner, could be Commissioner Garden. but the commissar could be maybe a little situational, or you need to have very oiled up the whole synergy for it to work. And I'm dumb.
He definitely does have to have a plan before you send him in, just because on math, having the extra APL just to back up, like, oh, I forgot a dude on a point, I gotta go score this point. Like, having those extra dorks does allow you to have just more room in your game plan to make mistakes. Whereas the Enforcer, you gotta have a plan and it better go off.
I also think that the goons are good because you need bodies to give to Khorne, you know? You need blood for the blood god. You need to generate those blooded tokens. So you playing a horde, well, I mean, playing pretty much any kill team, it's a lot about managing your own your own death, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also attrition, that's the word I'm looking for. It's
making sure that when your guys die, they've done a job.
Exactly. And I need to get people killed early on the game and close up. I need to get that third blooded token on the second turn, because that's when I get what I call the opera turn, which I go, you get a blood token, you get a blood token, you get a blood token, boom. Now someone's gazed.
Do you have like a fixed three that you're usually gunning for?
Well, plasma is a go-to. If I mean, you go for the gunners. And sometimes I like putting blood tokens on unusual spots just to mess with people's heads a little bit, because sometimes you don't know what to do with your blooded tokens. Sometimes turn three, it's like, I have a fistful of blooded tokens now. But I mean, my gunners, they're a go-to. The grenadier, of course. Who else? The butcher. Oh boy. Oh boy. That's, he's a tiny ogre. Let me tell you that.
He's quite good.
Yeah, I like to do like a pinch maneuver with those two. Come from left and right, and people are so concerned with fucking Ogryn. It's like, oh, the avalanche of muscle. Oh, and then Butcher's like, hello, motherfucker.
It's like an avalanche Johnny. Of blades.
Yeah,
because he eats the people that he kills, and getting that heal on an 8-wound operative, because the team has a couple 8-wound operatives, which I think is a thing that also throws people off when they first play against the blooded, because everyone looks like either a 7-wound operative or a big boy. But you do have a couple 8-wound operatives, and then you also have probably a couple random save types just kind of scattered within. Because if you play the Enforcer, you have a 4-up save. If you have the Shield guy, he's got a 4-up save. Sometimes he gets ceaseless.
It gets complicated sometimes with the 8s and 7s in there. But basically, the Butcher and the Tug and the Enforcer and the Leader. Those guys, they're 8 wounds.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've struggled with while playing against other blooded players at tournaments. It's like, all right, I gotta remember which one has 8 wounds and which one has 7. Because the breakpoints do matter depending on what team you're playing. Because you're doing bolters, the 7 wound operatives are way easier to just like, oh, I got a crit, he's gone. But with an 8 wound guy, you're like, oh man, he's still alive and now I gotta manage this dude with a blooded token. Because a one wound blooded guy with a knife, if he charges you, he's going to do some damage just because he has a guaranteed hit, which can be really annoying for players that don't finish off their food.
Yeah, yeah, and that could be also very menacing, you know, when you're like remaining in 2 wounds and you got a guy with a blooded token in there, you know, it charges and auto kills you. It's like there's no chance in hell you'll survive that, because here it says it hits.
It's definitely a team that definitely gets a lot more power as the game goes on if you can just keep your operatives alive. I know that we had just talked about the Doom guys, and Blooded, you can technically put all of your equipment points on a handful of people, but I don't think that's generally a great idea on Blooded. So how do you spread out your equipment points on your operatives? Because Blooded have lots of equipment, but they're not the most obviously powerful, so you got to like cobble together small bits of equipment to make some of your lesser operatives more useful. So how do you do it? How do you approach the problem?
Well, there's a little piece of equipment I enjoy a lot that's called incendiary shells. I use it mostly in close quarters for my shotgun because it gives you a lethal 5 at the cost of -1 damage, but it gives you blast.
Therefore, it gives you blast 1, fire. Right? Yeah, I think it gives you blast 1.
Blast
and
1.
It turns you into a normal shotgun, 4 dice on, I think, 3s, 3-3, or on 2s, 3-3, to 4 dice on 2s, 2-3, blast 1. Lethal 5 on in the dark, so obviously very good there.
That one I like a lot, and the thing that I like is that you can switch whenever you want. You can be shooting with the regular profile, or you can be shooting with blast profile. You can swap it. Just make sure you let your opponent know. And then I'm very scared, as a crowd, I am very scared of crowd control, naturally. So if my opponent has Blast, Splash, Torrent, or whatever kind of crowd control, I'll get those leather jackets and put those boys in beast belts. Because you always try to measure 2 inches in between each guy, but, you know, it happens. It happens all the time.
I think the other thing that you could do is you can also bait your opponent like, oh, look, I have 2 normal dudes with beast pelts behind cover. Go ahead and frag grenade me, and then I'll go delete the dude afterwards. Because, like, if you have rerolls defenses in cover with a retain, then you're keeping 1 on the first guy and then effectively rolling 3 dice. Probably not going to die to most normal frag grenades.
Yeah, that's right. Also, another thing I like a lot is if my opponent doesn't have blast, flash, or whatever crowd control source I've already mentioned, I would like to use the chest plates, armor plates, armor plate. Mm-hmm. There you go. And I just put them on my key operatives, maybe on my leader, so he can get real close and nasty with his plasma pistol. And guess if your leader has a blooded token, is he on route?
He gets a free crit. Basically, he has lead with strength. Case. So if he has the blooded token and he's more than 6 inches away from your drop zone, basically running at your opponent, he gets the free crit instead of the normal retain 1. So you're using the armor plates to make sure that he can take a little bit of an extra hit. I assume
he can, by the same token, a little bit.
By the same token, you probably want the armor plates on the Trench Sweeper or the Thug just because they end up being way bit tankier when they're in cover. Because reroll ones on a 4-up means that out of your 6 dice, you know, one of them is a reroll, which gives you a reasonable chance at getting another save.
Yep, that's pretty much how it goes. Then, if anyone has stun, I will put my little Argrin, his little breather, so that he doesn't deal with that stuff. he's absolutely useless. Not poor boy. Anyone else can take the stun, but he would be like...
Yeah, it's effectively like he gets stunned. It's like you gave up 2 other operatives in the process, right? Yeah. So you have 10 equipment points normally. You're taking armor plates and beast pelts, basically, depending on what kind of guns your opponent has. I know a lot of players take Wicked Blades and Sinister Trophy. Those feel like, you know, generally auto-includes. Do you feel like that's the case, or is it always kind of a mix and match depending on the matchup?
Now, Sinister Trophy, that's an auto pick. That's always on my butcher. Oh, sometimes I'm feeling crazy and I might put it on Flenser, but it lasts longer on my butcher normally.
The butcher can heal.
Plus, I like to use the butcher a lot, like to steal points, as well as the sniper. The sniper, I use him as a regular goon who you cannot shoot at. And he can shoot you. that's my mindset for him, because he's not that good of a sniper. I mean, he's a 3-3.
He's a very mobile gun. That's kind of really his thing.
So I just go take the objectives, you know, do your soldier stuff.
Yeah. And then, like, if he happens to get a shot, it's a fun bonus. I think it's important for, like, a lot of these horde teams to, like, have that mindset. So I think it's, you know, it's a good sign that you know, you bringing success with the team also showing that mindset. Because you've got a ton of models, but you don't have a lot of plebs. So, like, somebody has to be the one that just runs around and grabs points.
Yeah, I think it's key to know that you're going to lose some operatives. And it's not only going to happen, but you also need it. Because you need to snowball. And, what I was saying about the sniper is that the good thing is that if you leave him behind maybe light cover over an objective, he gets shot from a vantage point. He gets 2 dices from cover. So
yeah, he's got the camel cloak rule that a lot of other teams have access to. So using him as a bait piece just because people need to deal with him. But if he's on light cover, then they're on top of a vantage. Hopefully it's a vantage where you can take a return shot back at them. And he's probably going to live just because if you're behind cover and you're retaining twice, unless you have higher AP, you generally live through those attacks.
Yeah, that also makes him a good tool for, like, I think Beta Decima has a lot of good examples where there's, like, those ground-level objectives that are super vulnerable, and then, like, Super Conceal is the best way to take it, but, like, your Sniper with Retain 2 is, like, a pretty good answer there as well, and if they do shoot at him with Plasma, you know, they just killed a goon that you can now shoot back, and if they shoot, like, anything else at him, he's gonna survive.
Yeah, pretty much. And he's not a heavy hitter, but on a good roll, he can put some mean damage. I mean,
I've seen the sharpshooter do his work, especially against 7-wound, 8-wound teams where the 3-3 damage is appreciable, right? If you do it once or twice, it's like, it's fine. He's not incredible.
3-3 mortal wounds 1 actually makes you, like, pretty significantly more likely to one-shot a 7-wound model than 3-4.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest nightmare while playing kill team is playing versus people who have more activations or similar amount of activations than I. I mean, if they can stall more than I can, it's like, oh, shit.
How have you interacted with those teams? You know, Pathfinders, Veteran Guard. How have you interacted with those wider teams? Because Blooded have the tools to interact with these other teams with 12 operatives, but you do need a game plan going in.
Yeah, you definitely. Sometimes it makes you wish, like, I might even not need the Augurin in here. I just need to out-activate the other guy. I could use 2 more goons in here. Thank God for the bad guards mine, the demo mine. Oh God, that was one of my heaviest.
There are no friends. There are no friends of the veteran guard mine on this podcast.
Agreed. Yeah.
We really needed it. But, yeah,
I'm glad it's out of here. It was boring.
Yeah, it was gross.
I have trouble.
It's unfun.
I have trouble with hordes. I have trouble with people who can out-activate me, and I have trouble with people that can out-melee me. That's pretty much my biggest fears. Because, I mean, Pathfinders, they are scary as shit, but just target them. Manage to get a clear charge and target two of them at a time, maybe, whatever you can do. And I really like the shooting into close combat tactical deploy. Mm-hmm. Because people will be like, okay, I will shoot here. It's like, no, you can't, because they're... Yes, I can.
The fun part about the Pathfinder versus Blooded matchup is we can both shoot into melee.
Yeah, callous disregard. It's like,
yeah, you shoot into your own melees and you might hit your own friendlies, and then I shoot into our melees and I just blow you up if my guy gets out of the way.
That's a crazy game.
Yeah. Pathfinders, I think you do have to like pull the Blooded in, but luckily a lot of the Blooded operatives don't one-shot you unless they're the specialists, who definitely one-shot you, but like the in-between operatives don't one-shot me.
No, my Ogryn,
the leader, and then the butcher. If those are gone, it's fine. The thug is kind of annoying because he takes less damage, but
you can take a bunch.
But yeah, getting like forcing one player to like into those positions to take a shot first is really important. I think in those wider matchups, you're trying to play the turn one activation game a little bit, where you're trying to get scouting to get first, to make your opponent go first, or for you to go first, depending on how your opponent sets up. So there's a little bit of a mind game there to try to snipe the first activation to break parity.
The true rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, I've definitely had games come down to those sorts of super small decisions at high level play, just because if you get a line and you shoot one guy, it breaks the whole matchup open. When it comes to a bunch of dudes at seven wounds, which is what R2, which is what Blooded and Pathfinders end up playing like.
I also have a lot of trouble playing against Harkin Savagers, you know, the dwarves. They're hard, man.
They've been doing pretty well as well on the weekly stat show. I think they're pretty much on the uptick. I think they're one of their harder matchups was Commandos also. But the Commando nerf to Just a Scratch means that now all of their shenanigans where they get crits is working. Yeah. So they're much better against them now. And they do have a lot of fun niche strats where you're setting up a layer of barricades that you ignore and your opponent doesn't, and they're all heavy. So your opponent can't strip cover, so they get to set up in very bizarre positions on their side of the board.
It's weird, and the guy that really pulls my leg is this locator.
Mm-hmm.
My locator.
Yeah.
He'll be like, yeah, you cannot activate your Ogryn until two more activations. I'm like, that's exactly what I was going to. On high level play, that I think that's a key piece. I don't know. I think it's real good. It's like the Phobos.
The activations definitely has come up a lot more, especially on some of the newer teams. Phobos have the Vox Scream. Phobos have Omni Scramble. Night Lords have Vox Scream. Hearth can have the Locators, you know, delay. I think Inquisition Agents also have a delay.
Yeah, it's like Denunciation or Renounce or whatever. And like Mandrakes also with Harrowing Whispers. Is that the name of it?
Oh, yeah. Your leader can pretend stun people. You stand in there in the middle of your opponent's pile and you're like, all right, we're gonna gamble until one of your guys gets to go,
and then he maybe Omni Scrambles everyone within six. Have you played against Mandrakes with Blooded yet?
I haven't yet. I have played Night Lords though.
How's that?
A lot of fun. Actually, it was a very tight match. Lost by 1 point, but learning. I don't usually win against factions I never played against, because I just bang my head against the wall until I make a fucking hole in the wall, you know? That's my system.
I like that. That's, you know, I'm pretty similar. I like to play, I like to keep it simple. Like when I play Phobos, I only bring in cursors because I'm just like, now I only have one thing to think about. And you know, like when I was playing, Blades of Cain, I was only playing Howling Banshees. But now I actually picked up the Dire, not the Dire Avengers, the Striking Scorpions. So, maybe I'll try it again with two, but I still don't have any of the Dire Avengers. But yeah, just keeping stuff simple, and just like, just do the thing. It's fun. It's valid. I like that.
I enjoy a lot. I was going to say that I enjoy a lot struggling sometimes against adversity, if you would say so. Like sometimes your plan would, you will lose a key piece for your plan. And it'll be like, okay, now we have to improvise. And I don't like it when it happens a lot on the same games. But sometimes you get a challenge and it's like, okay, this won't work. It turns out I miscalculated this part. And being able to improvise, I think that's a very strong suit amongst the blood, that you can get an extra comms in between brackets, you know?
That's actually a good point. I think that a lot of players can struggle in the headspace of when something they expect to go right doesn't happen. Like, for example, a Space Marine goes up with Bolter Discipline, runs up to a dude, double taps. It doesn't go through. That guy explodes. And now suddenly you're down an operative. You expected your opponent to be down an operative and you to be, you know, at parity. And you've got to find a way to recover. You mentioned that on Blooded, you have a couple recovery methods, you know, one of them being the third APL from having Gaze of the Gods, among other ones. What other tools have you used in the past to kind of bail yourself out of a situation that you found yourself in of your own volition?
Oh boy, it's time. There's Dark Favor. That's got to be the number one.
Yeah, that's the bodyguard play.
Yeah, look out, sir. Yeah. So whenever one of your operatives has a blooded token, you can just direct the shot to another poor bastard.
That doesn't have a blooded token.
Within 2 inches of the original target. And that has saved so many key pieces from unexpected shots, or maybe sometimes even expected shots, but in which I was counting like, yeah, they will shoot here, but they don't know that the shot's going to be over there. So it's a very fucky mind trick, you know? It's like, yeah, you kill that guy. It reflected.
Yeah, one of the fun ways that I've heard people use that is to have the shield guy near one of your early blooded tokens. You're like, all right, you're going to shoot the shield in cover because it redirects it to that person. And then yeah, you draw, like, he becomes a valid target so that you get cover from those angles. So you can like hide, get cover, and suddenly you're shooting on fours with rerolls ones.
Or even to your sniper, you retain to cover.
That's right. Yeah. Cause you have a couple guys that are pretty solid at taking shots.
Some guys can take it, or even the Tug, he reduces one damage. There's a lot of people who can take a punch. You just want the key pieces that can take a punch to take a punch, and the other ones not to. it all comes to what we were saying earlier. It's basically attrition. As you want to control your troops and your losses.
So somewhat on that note, what, like, do you typically always take the same TAC ops, or do you change that up pretty often between games?
There's one TAC op I absolutely love, which is Bloodbath. I find it very hard to pick three TAC ops from a single archetype, which is Seek and Destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And not picking that one is like, this is why I play Blooded. I mean, I'm getting paid to kill these guys, you know? Because we have a saying down here that is that the game's called Kill Team, but it should be called Point Team. When you're playing Blooded, it's actually the same thing. So I like playing Kill Team as Kill Team, you know? Mm-hmm. Clean the whole opponent. I mean, if you kill off 50% of your opponent, more than 50% of your opponent's kill team, you get a victory point. If you clear more than 3/4 of your opponent's kill team, you get a second blood token, yeah, victory point.
Yeah, make your game plan very focused, right? Because you can only take Seek and Destroy anyway. Blooded is one of those teams that's cursed with a single attack op type. So you just take whatever makes the most sense for Seek and Destroy and play Bloodbath and just walk at your opponent and score points.
You know, it's a curse. But I if I would have, for example, any other archetype, I would still be playing Seek and Destroy. I know it. I just fucking know it.
The rules were clearly written with Seek and Destroy in mind for the team. Like, I think it would make sense for them to have infiltration to give them other things to do. But with how they're designing teams coming up right now, it seems like maybe some of the restrictions are loosening up anyway, since last box had three archetypes per team, which I find somewhat annoying as a Pathfinder player.
Yeah, you're right.
It would be nice if I could take Seek and Destroy as a range team. You know, Pathfinder, Seek and Destroy, just sit in the back and just blow people up, score points. Be great.
Yeah, very dangerous. But yeah, Blooded with playing security. Yeah, like go play Bedguard. Why would you do that?
Have you played against some of the current teams that have had an upswing in the meta since all the data slate changes? Thinking about Higher Tech Circle being one of the bigger ones. Are there big Higher Tech players in Argentina that you've gotten a chance to play against?
Well, I haven't actually. I haven't played against any Higher Tech. No, I can't think I have. But I'm very scared about the mind. I don't like things that restrain my movement at all. Once I was playing a tournament, and first turn, when the mind was still huge, they would put mine. It was
an they can get a mine that's a 6-inch bubble just like sitting on your deployment, and then one leaves.
I just concede. I was like, okay. My first activation was concede. I was like, you want it, checkmate. I can do shit. Because this is going to go on, and next turn, you're going to put that shit again in there. And yeah, let's go eat something. All right. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the... Warp Coven, you know, the new thingy.
Warp Coven. It's kind of like a side grade, though, because they went from a 2-inch loss of charge and dashing now into 1-inch, but it basically is up all the time now. Whereas before, there was generally a little bit of time where if your opponent was making a choice, you would get
two activations before.
But now it's just on all the time. So you just have slower charges and slower dashes against them, which can be rough.
Feels actually better, like, flavorly. Like thematically feels more accurate, but
it also like lets the Rubric Marines have a lease on life, because the Rubric Marines, because they move only 6 inches on an activation, it's hard for them to actually get use at a third APL for charge, fight, shoot, which is generally what people are using that third APL for. So it kind of evens up the playing field for people who want to use Rubrics, which from what I can tell is something that people are using a little bit more of. Because now they've been buffed enough where the Rubrics are pretty solid and the Zangors are pretty solid, especially with 9 Zangors.
Zangors can fight, dude.
Yeah, I learned that you probably don't want to play against a bunch of Zangors, right? Like three sorcerers and 6 Zangors is probably actually not fun for the Blooded player.
No, it's. I think it's one of my please don't get this in a tournament kind of kill teams.
Yeah, it's like a crazy combo of like. So, how many Zangors will they get? It would be.
They get 6.
They nearly match your activation count. They outfight you and they slow you down. It's like a perfect cocktail of like big yikes.
It's a lot to chew.
Yeah, it almost seems like scarier than Felgor, maybe.
It is. To me, it is, because Felgor, you know, it's. You're going into a fight, but these guys, they do those evil Jedi mind tricks, you know.
Yeah, the three sorcerers in the background are like firing off blasting shots, firing off indirect grenades, slowing you down, teleporting things. And then the Zangor is actually in the blooded match specifically, since you come up to the midline so fast, they can also do the Felgor thing of chain activating two Zangors and popping over and grabbing two guys and just deleting them.
Yeah.
Like, and they might actually have goats with gats, which is also scary. And they break they actually break the charging asymmetry because they can have a horn, which gives them all an extra inch of charge. And then your charge is down an inch. So you're like fully 2 inches. There's a 2 inch bubble where you have to throw yourself into the line of fire before you can grab someone.
Absolutely asymmetrical. The stuff nightmares are made of.
Actually sounds kind of hot now that I've talked about it.
No, please no. But yeah, it's a lot of fun though. And I don't know, maybe you can sneak a good plasma shot here and there and maybe kill a Marine or two. And the tide turns around.
Yeah, you do have the activation game to really make sure that they finish their activations and you're getting the best shot possible.
Yeah. You can outweigh them. That's a good thing. You can still stall.
Okay, so another question. Have you played on Blooded on Beta Decima much?
I played about 5 games of Beta Decima.
And I'm curious to hear, like, was it super, super rough? Or, like, what? Or like, is it more hopeful than people are saying, in your opinion? Or is it really just doomed for Melee?
I don't think it's that bad. It's fun. It gets complicated, all the measuring here and there, the itsy bitsy 4 inch here, 2 inch here to go down, and, you know. But I don't think it's as bad as some people say. It really makes me wish I had ropes or something like that. I always like, with the addition of Beta Decima, some kill teams got like ropes or parachutes or
like two whatever. Equipment point ropes is a global equipment thing just to give you at least a little bit of footing. Granted, they removed the jump test. Now jumps are just free moves because they decided to take the coward's way out.
Yeah, just flat on the ground, you know. I feel like there are some kill teams that are very comfortable. For example, Harkin Salvagers. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of tools in there. They can skip over shit. And you'll be like, I cannot make it to that objective. I move 5 inches and I make it fine.
Yeah, surprisingly, the Harkin are pretty good on Beta Decima just for getting around. Just because you have all the extra rope. So you, at least you're not taking this huge... You actually move a little bit faster onto the platforms compared to your opponents. Because you get 3 inches from the edge of the platform compared to your opponent's 1 or 2.
And there's this one map I found in which if you stand a 40 mil base right in the middle of two objectives, which is my Ogryn, you're controlling both. So I played a mission in capture in there, and I was trying pretty hard to get my Ogryn up there just to do that, but I need him somewhere else. So he couldn't make it.
Bonk someone else, huh?
Yeah,
that's a pretty good point for Chaos Cults, because Chaos Cults can have a couple dudes on capture sitting between objectives. Like, if a Torment can hold two objectives while the other Torments get to the other side, that's actually a fine use of operatives in those situations.
Indeed.
Oh, and I guess Hunterclade would also be another team that could use something like that.
Yeah.
Where if there are two objectives close enough together, Hunterclade can sit on both of them.
Ross Elgers. Mm-hmm. Good old 40 mils.
So, you know, we talked about Blooded and we touched a little bit on Argentina, but you want to tell us a little bit more about the Argentinian kill team scene, you know, how big you guys are, where your local shops are, in case anyone from Argentina is listening and doesn't know where you guys are at.
Well, yeah, of course. I represent a club that's called Warp Games, as in the warp, you know.
We'll have a link in the show notes for anyone curious.
And we're a small club. We started it out with a couple of friends. We needed a place. The city needs a game club. And so we started out. And it's beautiful. It's growing a little bit every day. We're getting new people. They want to play different stuff. We're getting a bigger Kill Team community. And we're making one tournament every month. At least one tournament every month. And we consider that like sacred. It's like this month. This Saturday? Next Saturday?
Is it like the first Saturday of every month or something?
Second.
Or does it? Second. Okay, nice.
And this one's called May Day, because we're May. And we're located on Cordoba City, which is not the capital of Argentina. It's actually Buenos Aires. But it's a very big achievement for us to say that we are considered the Argentinian Kill Team capital by the people of Buenos Aires. It's a very nice community growing up, and we love having new players all the time. So if anyone's listening, you can join us.
Are there other Kill Team scenes in other parts of Argentina? You mentioned Buenos Aires.
Of course.
Yeah. Cross-pollination or Buenos Aires? Do you guys cross-pollinate between different cities for tournaments?
Yes, sometimes there's tournaments in between Buenos Aires, Cordoba. There's people who go. We have people from. We actually live in the city that's right in the middle of the country. So sometimes this is a very big 40K capital. So people from all the country come here to play 40K once a year for a big tournament. And so it's like a meeting point, you know, it's right in the middle.
Is that big tournament? Are you planning to try to put Kill Team in that big tournament this year?
Oh, no, we're making our own Kill Team tournaments as well. Because this is not exactly in our city, but it's more like in the hills. It's more of let's rent a cabin and go to the woods and play Warhammer, which is pretty fun, but I'm more of a city rat, you know. Don't have a car. So we have our small club in here. We rented an office space downtown, and we administer it. We have our own fridge. We keep it supplied with snacks and drinks.
So you guys basically have like your own little storefront for your clubs.
Yeah, sort of. We don't. It just helps pay the rent, you know. Mm-hmm. So we just sell some soda, some beers.
That sounds really cool. Who else helps you facilitate the club? Because it's probably not just you. You know, there's probably other people helping out.
No. Of course, we have a bunch of people helping us. Our tight operation is basically it's my friend Gallo, my friend Nueve, and there's also those are the guys which opened the club with me like about a year and a half ago now. No, I'm sorry, it's gonna be a year now, about a year ago. So. And then we added some more friends. We added our friend Pojo, who helped us with graphic design for all the banners and all the flyers and stuff. And we have another buddy, Mati, who helped us with administrative stuff. He's a big nerd. And now we have people from the 40K scene joining. They want to form a part of our club. They've been playing 40K for quite a while, and they want to join us. So we have now Tony, which is our 40K representative. We manage to open 2 days a week. Every week we open on Tuesdays and we open on Saturdays. So people know they can come to the store and the store will be open and we'll be playing. And then other community members suggest like, hey, I want to do 40K on Wednesdays. Okay, there you go. So we managed to, we're doing some organic growth, let's say.
Sounds very cool, because you're basically building a whole scene kind of from scratch, right? You guys have a spot you're renting.
Yeah, we're trying to make it. We don't have Warhammer stores in here in Argentina. There's two resellers, but they aren't official Warhammer stores. They're just like hobby shops who carry some Warhammer products. And so we basically bring our miniatures when we travel, or we bring them from Buenos Aires whenever we go there. We 3D print some miniatures as well. We're a proxy friendly community. We don't give a fuck as long as it represents what it's supposed to be. We good.
Gotta represent it, and it has to be distinguishable. That's always my rule. Yeah. Like, as long as your models all look like they're different and they kind of at least pretend like they have a plasma gun, it's fine. You just can't have 3D exactly the same. Yeah. And then be like, oh, this one's plasma, this one's melta, and I'm just gonna, you know, whatever. It at least needs to be distinguishable. That's always been my rule. And
make
base
them
sizes.
Look the same so you can swap them.
Yeah, that's definitely where, like, it's not allowed.
Yeah, that's our rule. As long as we can identify and respect the proportions and it is what it's supposed to be happy.
Yeah.
And so there's another bunch of clubs in Buenos Aires as well. There are a lot of nice people. There's another club here in our city as well, the guys from Kill Team Cordoba. They also like to host tournaments, and it's very nice. We have like a brotherhood in between our clubs. We're actually pretty close. We're like three blocks away. But, well, we play other stuff. They play strictly Kill Team. They don't play anything else. And, well, that's our local scene. We want to make it bigger.
Yeah, hopefully this helps get the message out a little bit. And if anyone is ever in Argentina or in Cordoba, you know, from any of the other listeners, you know who to hit up.
You can call the Rodman.
Are there any other teams that you're looking forward to? I know you've talked a lot about Blooded. Obviously, you really enjoy them, but there's a lot of other teams. Are you thinking about picking any other teams up or anything that's exciting coming up?
I'm very hyped about the last announced box of the Dwarves in Trench Coats and the Gene Stealer Cults. I kind of like both. I haven't seen a box in a while that I was like, okay, I want those guys and I want those guys as well. One of my buddies was like, hey, you want to split them up?
You're like, no, I want them all.
Yeah, I want them all. That's more for my polishing.
Hearthkin weapons just look absolutely insane. It's like lever action, revolver, shotgun.
Yeah, it's like, they have no right to be so cool. It's like, fuck you.
Yeah, I've got an Imperial Guard team that is... It's Brood Brothers with that like classic Inquisition paint scheme. And that's like, now we have like actual Brood Brothers coming out, and I'm like, I'm pretty excited about those two. The Patriarch seems, or the whatever that dude, the big old 20-foot tall G.
Yeah, the Patriarch.
Yeah, he's the Patriarch.
Yeah, totally normal operative that should absolutely be in Kill Team, just totally like the Zombies are.
It's a. I like. If he plays something, if they play something like Blooded, which they look like they would, because they're a bunch of guys with one big guy, I might be interested. I like a lot the Crew as well. I think that they are a very underplayed kill team, which is very solid, and if it could be very aggressive. Very aggressive. If that's a kill team that's played forward instead of always... On the shadows, how it's usually played, it can be very, very powerful. I'm scared of aggro Crute.
Yeah, I think Crute are one of the interesting teams because their hard matchups are the elite teams and commandos. It's because it's very hard for their profiles to punch through 10 wounds with just a scratch. And power armor is just like rough for them. Because you have 6 attacks on 2s, 2, 3... AP2, but that doesn't really do anything to Marines. Like, you go up, you shoot a Marine, takes like 8 damage and he just kills you.
Yeah, that's, it's very hard when you have so many models on the table. It's very hard not to get double charged. And sometimes those little doggies can give you a mean bite.
True.
But doggy, no biscuit.
He'll just eat you as the biscuit.
Yeah, you're the biscuit.
Yeah, 5 dice on 3s, 3-4 rending is no joke against Blooded or other similarly small teams.
Yeah, like anything 8 wounds or less is just going to get like munched, and then anything more is just can be maimed.
I think that Crude are a very underlooked kill team that people should be playing more because they are mean motherfuckers. They're ugly. They're mean.
Well, Bratman, I think, we touched on Argentina, Blooded, a lot of the random tactics that Blooded have. Anything else you want to talk to about before we head off for the night?
Well, not really. I want to thank you all for having me. I want to say hello to all the communities, everyone who's listening, who knows the Ratman. The Ratman loves you. And I hope to see you all in Atlanta this year. It's going to be a blast.
That is the goal.
Blast, splash, torrent, everything.
It's going to turn your lethal 5 up on in the dark.
Yeah, boy. And I'm honored you have me. I'm very happy to be considered a representative of the faction.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, and thank you, listeners, for listening until the end. Stay tuned. If you haven't already, like and subscribe, and